It's an excuse for me to drink at 9 a.m. How could work get mad? I was doing an interview.
Just line up some pre-recording shots, just like a line of three each, and just bam them down and ready to go. It like loosens everyone up. And this is Chris.
And I gotta admit, I'm a little bit buzzed right now.
Oh, well. Why might that be, I wonder?
We have a really awesome episode for you guys. We are speaking to Chris, another Chris.
Not
different
me.
Chris.
Yeah.
From the podcast Pubcast Worldwide, where he interviews local people in a variety of countries within you know, bars and clubs and
breweries and wineries and distilleries and all manner of places where alcohol is made or consumed.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was
it's like the
fun.
Dream job.
I know. And he's gone to so many cool places and got to see so many cool things.
Yeah, I feel like we need to really leverage our podcast to let us travel more often. If anything, it's been a hindrance to us traveling because we both need to be available at certain times of day every week. I feel like we're doing this backwards.
I know, we're the only travel podcast that doesn't. Well, I mean, not you and I definitely do travel, but
just not while
not
podcasting.
Because of the podcast. Yeah,
yeah, really, in spite of the podcast is how we travel. So yeah, we're gonna have to pick Chris's brain about how he manages to make that work, because I feel like we're doing it all ass backwards. So yeah, we're gonna have a really fun chat this week. But real quick, what have you been up to this week, Kate? Anything exciting?
Yeah, I went to. I'm trying to think when I last spoke to you. Obviously,
roughly a week ago.
Yeah, I know. What have I done since then? What did I do over the weekend? Oh, I went to a friend's house to decorate for Christmas.
Oh, nice.
I had my friend Tristan from Croatia was here visiting, which I mentioned in this episode because that's actually how I met our guest. Mm-hmm. So he was here visiting, did a lot of drinking. And then this week, my mom and I went to a concert last night to see Dermot Kennedy, who is an Irish kind of singer-songwriter with a little bit of
I feel
of
like you've
pop.
Mentioned him before, actually. That name
yeah,
is familiar.
I love him. I love him.
He completes
Except,
you.
Actually, I feel like I'm having a falling out with him a little bit because he is an amazing artist, Dermot Kennedy, in case any of you want to write that down or Spotify search it. But I knew him because of a song that came out ages ago. Mm-hmm. And it's a song I feel like launched him from just like playing in bars to like actually getting like to recording music and actually like booking like paid gigs and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And now he's just released an album and he's just released two songs from that album on the radio. And so he's blown up a little bit, but all he sang at the concert was all of the songs from his album. And he didn't play
none of the classics.
One song that like, I love so much that like, honestly, it's the reason I pay to go see him live. It's
oh,
like,
bugger.
Witness your favorite song live in person.
Yeah.
So that was disappointing because the song didn't play, but since the last time I saw him in New York a few years ago, I've kind of fallen in love with his drummer.
Oh.
And didn't know I loved him the first time I saw him, but I follow him on Instagram and he always plays these amazing videos of him drumming during the concerts. But you don't, like, when you're listening in the audience, you don't pay attention to, like, kind of, like, the background. Probably,
yeah,
unless
it's
you're a
hard
musician,
to focus.
You're not really,
yeah.
You're listening to the lyrics and the voice and all of that stuff. And so when I started following him and I was watching the videos of him playing drums, and you can't really hear actually the song he's playing, and it's just, he's incredible, he's talented. So the whole time during the concert, I was just staring at the drummer like, you're amazing, I love you. Can I take you home with me tonight? And he's Irish, he's got long hair.
I mean, if I know drummers, the answer to that question was probably yes.
I don't know, I think I have no idea if this is true or not, but I feel like he has a partner, and so I'm not one to, you know, break up houses or
you're not a home wrecker.
Toes.
Yeah,
no.
That's good. That's classy.
I try to avoid that.
Yeah, smart.
I keep it classy in some ways. Sometimes
I feel like it's something that comes with age. You just learn to be classier.
Most of us. How about you? What have you been up to? You had Thanksgiving.
Well, Was that last week? Holy shit, I've had a big week. Yeah, I had my first Thanksgiving, so went over to LA and ate all of the food and drank and watched American football. And then I turned 36, so I had my birthday on Monday. So my lovely wife took me for a hike out here in Palm Desert, and then we had lunch together. We went to see a movie, Knives Out. So if you haven't seen that, it's fantastic. And then she made me a delicious
cake. Never even heard of that.
Oh my god, it's so good. It's like a like an old school like murder mystery, but with like a really big cast and a bit funny and a bit dark. It's good. It's got really good reviews.
I'll have to check that out.
Terrific movie. One of the best ones I've seen this year.
Should I sing you happy birthday?
If you want to. In Ukrainian, if you could, please. Slemboroche.
I was gonna say, is that actually how it is?
Yeah. I don't know any more of it.
I was like, do you know how to sing?
It's like Slemnoroche Nyom Chris. I could be wrong. If I have a Ukrainian listener who's like, what the fuck, Chris? But my two Ukrainian coworkers sang that to me, so.
I could do Spanish. Feliz cumpleaños a ti. Feliz cumpleaños a Chris. Feliz cumpleaños a ti.
It always sounds weird when they just put like their version to the tune of Happy Birthday, because like you have to like force extra syllables into something that only has four syllables usually.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah. Nice. Well, I appreciate that. I've been serenaded now in English and Spanish for my birthday. So
well,
that was
you're
lovely.
Welcome. I think I also used to know. Oh no. So have you ever been to a Chevy's in America?
I don't even know what that is.
It's like a chain Mexican restaurant, but they honestly have the best chips and salsa I've ever had.
Oh, like, well, shit, I have to track that down.
So good. My mom actually has her cookbook and makes their salsa at home. It's so good.
Oh.
But you definitely find a Chevy's in California for sure. But
I'm leaving California today, but good to
well,
know.
Next time. You'll be back.
In 2021, yes.
They probably have it in Seattle as well.
I'll have a
but
look.
But they always come to your table and like, happy, happy birthday from the Chevy's crew. We wish it was our birthday so we could party too. Olé!
An authentic Spanish birthday greeting.
Yeah. So there you go. Three happy birthdays to you.
Three happy birthdays in Chevy's, Spanish, and English. Well, speaking of, I am flying to Seattle this evening, leaving California behind. So I need to go and pack. So this is as good a time as any, I think, to jump into our episode of Boozy Goodness.
Yeah. Enjoy, guys. It pairs nicely with a glass of pint of craft beer.
or a sugar-free energy drink if it's before noon where you are.
Nah, weak sauce. Weak sauce. All right, guys, enjoy the episode and don't forget to rate, review, subscribe. And yeah, that's it. Enjoy.
We love you.
Great. Thank you for having me, Caitlin and Chris.
I got so confused for a moment and was like, wait, is she welcoming me to the show? Because this is a new level of formality that I can embrace.
I was gearing up for that as I responded. It's like, wow, two out of three people on this call are named Chris today. I look forward to the first time that's confusing, or I should say the second time since it's already threw you for a loop once.
Should we, we could just call me CWB. I mean, that's the name of the podcast, but it is also my initials. That might make it easier.
Why are you always pushing for that?
Because it's literally my name.
And my initials are CWL, so maybe that won't be as easy as we were thinking.
Damn it.
That was going to be my question to you, actually, because when I added you on Skype, obviously we record this on Skype, your, like, it was CW and then your last name, and I was like, I wonder what his middle name is, but I just realized that Chris is not for his middle name. It's part of his last name, so.
It is.
Unless your middle name is Walker.
Mine is William, a good English name. I'm 50% English heritage, so that's where that one comes from.
Nice. I'm a Michael.
All right.
So is it safe to assume if you're saying you're 50% English heritage, one of your parents is English?
That is true. Yeah, my mom's side is English and my dad's side is German. So my last name is the real doozy of my full name. That's Lukey, but apparently in German it's pronounced something closer to Luca. But having been in the U.S. for a couple generations now, we have since Americanized it as we do with most pronunciations, it seems like.
Yeah, I know the listeners can't see the spelling, but looking at it, I wasn't going to even attempt to try and pronounce your last name because I knew I'd butcher it.
There was a reason I decided to pronounce it here at the start, just in case you didn't have it yet. So hopefully you snagged it while we were going through it, but it's a weird one.
I got it in there now. So then does that mean you have a UK passport or a European passport?
No, I don't. I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri. I'm definitely, you know, U.S. born through and through. In fact, for as much travel as I've done and for doing an international beer podcast, I've actually never lived abroad before. So I need to change that at some point because I've taken some extensive trips, but I have yet to lay down roots in, you know, England or Berlin or South America or wherever the flavor of the travel may be at the moment.
Now, do you have the, like, could you get a UK or a European passport? Were either of your parents born there?
No, I'm trying to think. I don't even know when my grandparents' parents, I think I'm like fifth generation US, if I had to take a guess. Yeah, it's been a while.
You missed out on that sweet passport.
Yeah, no sweet passport deals. I don't know. It would be cool to have dual citizenship at some point, but I feel like there's a lot of work and a lot of living abroad that goes into that. That's nothing where you just go across the border to Canada. It's like, hey, I'd like to be a citizen here too.
Yeah. Or we'll have some free healthcare, eh?
That would not be a bad thing. That would not be a bad thing at all.
because it's funny. I mean, I feel your pain. I've lived in six or something countries, I don't know, but you know, some of them not so legally. usually just on tourist visas and working in pubs. And actually, funnily enough, the way that I found you is through your podcast, which is called Pubcast Worldwide.
You got it.
Because one of my best friends in the world, Tristan, you interviewed him for his bar Sanctuary in Croatia in Split.
Yeah, holy smokes. That was like 2 years ago, and I was also just coming off of a week-long boat trip, so I was really tired and hungover, but we still powered through that interview. That was a fun one.
Oh, yeah. I actually lived in Split and worked with Tristan for a while. I lived with him for a while. We actually met working pub crawls in Prague together, like, ages ago.
Well, he mentioned Prague as well, because actually that's where I was heading right after that. The next day I was jumping a flight up to Prague, and actually when I was preparing for this interview, gave a little listen to your bar crawl episode.
Oh yeah.
Oh, Prague, nice.
In there also.
So me and Tristan go way back working in the pub crawl and bar industry abroad. So I just thought, yeah, that was how he never even told me he was on a podcast. And then I actually heard it from someone else who sent me the link. And so I only just listened to it a couple weeks ago. And I was like, we got to get this guy on.
Love it. Yeah, I think that was episode 28, something like that. It's been a little while since I've had him on. But yeah, is he still over in Split or is he adventuring somewhere else now?
No, he's still in Split. He was actually just here visiting me in London. I live in London now, and he was visiting me here last weekend. But he's still in Split. He'll be there for another couple of years, running Sanctuary. They think they're going to start opening another bar there. So,
Nice. Yeah. Well, good to hear the past guests of Pubcast Worldwide are doing big things around the world.
Yeah. So how did you get started? So you've done loads of traveling, obviously.
Yes.
Where have you been? How did that transfer into a podcast talking about bars and drinking cultures as you've been traveling?
Yeah, so great question. I'll give a little backstory on how Pubcast Worldwide came about. So
go for it.
Really, and I wish more people would do something like this. I was just thinking to myself one day, you know, if I could do anything in the world, what would it be? And I'm like, you know, that Anthony Bourdain guy looks like he has a pretty cool job. He gets to travel around the world, eat and talk with interesting people. And I'm like, what's stopping me from doing something like that? And in our day and age of YouTube and podcasting, there was really nothing that was getting in the way of that. So, you know, I spent, I think, $40 on podcast equipment. And by podcast equipment, I mean two, like, cheap USB microphones. And I talked to a handful of my friends in San Francisco that were in the travel space. And I'm like, hey, I've got this idea. I'd love to start this show where I interview the world's most fascinating people over drinks at the best bars and breweries around the globe. And I remember it was a rainy day in San Francisco, kind of like it is today. San Francisco is where I currently call home. And I'm in the Uber going to Vesuvio, which is a classic beat poetry cocktail bar in the North Beach neighborhood, which was it's not only San Francisco's Little Italy neighborhood, but it's also it was the hotbed of the beat movement back in the day. Anyway, so I'm in the car and I'm like super nervous. I'm like, this podcast is gonna suck. It's terrible. I have no idea what I'm doing. I should just have this Uber turn around right now. And I get there, hit record, and it was a freaking blast. And you know, I did a few more episodes after that, and I'm like, all right, I'm on board with this. So let's keep it going. So I started, you know, I upgraded my podcast equipment, booked some tickets to Colorado, St. Louis, Wisconsin, started doing the podcast while I was on the road and just set up interviews in advance because the reality was I was traveling a ton as it was. So I thought, wouldn't it be cool to do something to capture some creative content along the way, meet some interesting people, and also let's showcase the drinking culture in those areas. So back, I guess the summary is it's an Anthony Bourdain inspired show. Rest in Peace was a huge influence on getting started, and after 3 years, it just keeps on rolling.
That's an awesome backstory. That's like a Marvel origin story. I love that. we need to improve our story, Kate. Ours is a bit less exciting.
I mean, I don't know. I think our story is just exciting enough. We're technically in our second season of our podcast, but we move around so much. We definitely have to keep things like compact.
Sure.
We're learning as we go, but we have a lot of fun with it. So I would never, we're learning, but
yeah. Yeah. I think the only issue we've had is, you know, trying to manage two and sometimes three time zones, to schedule recording can be a bit of a headache, but hopefully we'll be on the same continent soon at least, which should make things a little less frustrating. I'll be in Europe next year. You're in Europe, and then we just need to not get any guests in like Australia. Sorry, Australia.
Yeah. I'll tell Europe. You what. I went to Australia for the first time last year. It is literally the worst time zone in the world.
Oh my god! It sucks. Yeah.
I mean, it's like most, and maybe this is just my opinion as someone from the U.S., but I feel like the world operates on Eastern Standard Time for the most part. Like the New York time zone. Pretty standard, but when you're in Australia, and I guess it depends on daylight savings time, when you're in Australia, it is literally 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. in New York, when it is 10 p.m. to 7 a.m. in Australia.
Yeah.
I'm like, that is exactly when someone should be asleep. Like,
yeah, it is completely counterproductive trying to do anything. East Coast to Australia. West Coast, not so bad. Only 5 hours, well, 19 hours
a day,
but 5 hours, yeah.
Sure,
it's manageable,
sure.
But the East Coast time to Australia time is pretty much impossible.
Yeah, it's really difficult for here too. Like, I live in London now. I have loads of friends in Australia, and I used to live in New York, so I know that struggle for sure. But I live in London now, and our half of my company's team is in Australia. So every 2 weeks, we do like a full company meeting, and we have to come into the office like an hour early. They have to stay an hour late. And at that point, we're just like, oh god, none of us want to be here right now.
Yeah, yeah.
It does sound like a key difference is that you're doing a lot of your interviews face-to-face. Is that's the kind of the impression I got from how you described it?
I am, yeah. And that was by design also. I do another podcast in the tech industry called Manufacturing Happy Hour. Similar premise. I drink with tech executives during that show. I guess there's a little theme in all of the stuff I do, but on that show, I'm willing to do Skype interviews or online interviews. But the reason I wanted to do PubCast Worldwide face-to-face was, one, I'm a massive extrovert, so I love being around people. I knew if I were doing a podcast that was more often than not, you know, just over an audio connection, and this is just me, because most of my podcasting friends do remote interviews all the time, mm-hmm. and they do them awesomely. But I'm just like, you know, I want that face-to-face experience, and I also want that feeling of being inside the bar or being inside the brewery where there's just a little bit of background noise, not to the point that it's distracting, but to the point that you kind of sense the ambiance of that place and you feel like you're part of that conversation versus just listening in on something that was recorded over the internet. But I'll be honest, I could simplify my life a lot if I decided to start doing remote interviews. So I'm not necessarily taking that option off the table at this point, especially as the show keeps rolling. And now that I've got another podcast on my plate, that's starting to look a little more appealing from time to time.
Oh, my God. So are you doing three now?
Just the two. Yeah. Yeah. Just those. Yeah. Three would be a little much. Three might make me go
three
crazy.
Would be ambitious. Yeah. Especially if they were all drinking related, you'd have the worst gout on the planet.
Yeah. It's, I think that's the biggest part of it. If I did one more drinking related show, I think you could call me an alcoholic at that point.
I think, yeah, there's programs for that. It's like alcoholic
there are.
Podcasters
there are.
Anonymous. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. PA.
It's a very,
PA.
Yeah. It's a niche. A niche wing of the Alcoholics Anonymous family, specifically for content creators.
I might as well join that as well, considering I always have a glass of wine when we're recording. Although, I will say, because we were doing drinking abroad and drinking cultures and things like that, I did buy a bottle of whiskey on my way home. So I will be drinking whiskey while we have this conversation as well.
And let me just crack my beverage. There we go. I've got a sugar-free energy drink because it's 11:30 in the morning and I can't do alcohol just yet.
I'm in the same boat, Chris. I am doing my coffee still right now, nice and warm. It's funny, when I would do some interviews on my other show, Manufacturing Happy Hour, like I'd have to meet up with people at like, you know, 9 a.m. sometimes to shoot videos. And a little spoiler alert, when I had to do that, I would just use iced tea or something that looked like, you know, could pass as a beer. But
yeah.
more often than not, my guests would just be pissed because they're like, I thought we were drinking. I'm like, it's 9 o'clock on a Monday. I'm not that crazy. I'm a marketer, not an alcoholic. Come on.
I don't know. I'm with them. I would be like, that's the only reason I agreed to do this podcast.
Maybe that's another strategy I need to rethink as
it's
well.
It's an excuse
I have...
for me to drink at 9 a.m. How could work get mad? I was doing
just
an
interview. Just line up some pre-recording shots, just like a line of three each, just bam them down and ready to go. It like loosens everyone up. You got the right vibe. I think we should start doing that before our episodes, Kate, like regardless of the topic.
That is a good point. I think the one or two beers throughout the recording, or in your case, like a line of shots, you know, I feel like that does a lot to calm the person down. And, you know, because a lot of people aren't used to being on podcasts or being on video. So anything to kind of ease someone in that scenario. And in my opinion, beer, alcohol, it's a perfect medicine for that.
Social lubricant. Hell yeah.
Woo.
So speaking of, since we're on the topic of drinking and how it loosens people up, you've obviously drank in many a places. Where would you say has, I guess, the most fun drinking culture that you've experienced?
Ooh, good question. That is, it's always tough to kind of put the priority order on things. Like when someone says, what's your favorite spot? That one's almost impossible to answer.
Oh, yeah.
I think there are every spot, the drinking culture has its own unique things. I think, you know, as I mentioned, I've got European heritage. I mean, when I've been in Germany before, or when I've been in England, like, people just know how to throw down and throw back there. That is, just the quantities that people are able to consume there is amazing.
Oh my God, then, don't I know it.
I was going to say, you're there right now. And then kind of on the flip side of that, one of my favorite spots, I always tell people if I had to pick a favorite continent to travel around, it's South America, because it's kind of close to home. You feel a little bit of that American influence, but you feel that European influence in spots, especially like around Brazil when you're down there. And I love the social nature that they have down there. Just stay out late, you know, people go out a little later there. They don't start quite as early as we do. But nevertheless, just that overall social culture, whether it's drinking, whether it's negotiating at a stand on the street for something, it just all plays into the social element. And I really dig that about Latin American culture.
I would not have expected that. I was thinking it was going to be Germany or the UK. So that's interesting to know.
I kind of gave you two answers there. Germany and UK you did. Is definitely up there from the European standpoint. I'd say those are where I've had some of the most fun over there.
I mean, it definitely always depends on what you're going for or like what kind of drinking environment you enjoy, because yeah. I think like there's a lot of great, you know, craft beer if you're going around the US, and definitely other parts of like the UK and Europe is picking up on that as well. But pub culture to me in the UK, like mm-hmm. that's something that the US has tried and just cannot master and just will never be a thing. And
yeah, a bar something... does not stack up against a good pub. That's for sure.
You're but totally right.
But even if you have a pub, like I've been to pubs in the US, but it's just because the culture of drinking is different. Like I feel like you go to a bar pretty much usually to get drunk if you're in the US. There's not
that
just
is true.
Like
yeah,
sitting
a pub
and
is,
talking.
Yeah, a pub is definitely more of a kind of a social and even family friendly. Like I don't know about the UK. I imagine it's similar, but Australian pubs usually will have a restaurant and they'll have areas where kids are able to hang out. So obviously not everyone's taking their kids to the pub, but I've definitely gone to the pub as a family and had a meal and, you know, there's people gambling and people drinking the next room over, but the actual brasserie area is pretty tame by comparison.
Yeah, in the UK, it's, you know, the pub, like, you bring your kids. Kids are allowed until, I think, 8 p.m. or something like that at most pubs.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. There's loads of games. People have their dogs in there. But it's not a place that people go, you know, just on the weekends after a long week's
right.
work.
Yeah.
They go every day after work. And they
yeah,
know
pubs
how
are like open
have...
for lunch and
yeah, oh god, a boozy lunch, so much fun. But they go yeah. after, you know, they go after work and you meet up with your friends for like a pint or two, and then you go home and cook dinner and do all like your laundry and your responsibilities. And in the US, it's just not like that, at least not in my experience. If you go to the bar after work, well, you're considered an alcoholic, but also you're not going to have just one or two with a friend and go home. You end up knocking back five, and then you're hammered, and then your life's ruined because you never do anything.
Wow. That shit
yeah,
just went dark.
I agree with that pub culture comment. And Kate, I'm glad you brought that up because I was thinking I wanted to add that to my answer too, where like you said, not only like the literal family element where you can bring them till 8 p.m., but also, I mean, the bar itself feels like a family also
yeah,
because you're
absolutely.
Seeing a lot of the regulars that are going there after work. I will add a caveat to that. I do think there are some parts of the U.S. It's not like U.K. pub culture, but I think the corner bar, especially in like Midwestern cities, like where I grew up in St. Louis, and I bartended at a place called Conway's Smokin' Bar and Grill in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which was like right on the border, right on the fringe of like kind of a rough neighborhood. But you had like a solid group of locals coming in there every day. And while it doesn't necessarily have that same, I guess what's that like I said before, that same family feel as a UK pub, I do think some of the maybe more mid-sized US cities can come a bit closer to that vibe than say where I'm at in San Francisco or like a New York City where there are just so many transplants in those cities that
yeah.
you know it's often hard to keep that same cast of characters coming in.
You've got that those smaller bars, you get that Cheers vibe.
Yeah, yeah, the Cheers vibe is exactly what I'm talking about.
I won't disagree with you there on the because in my town in San Luis Obispo, California, which is where I'm from.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And Chris has been there before when he was doing a US road trip. So he's seen it as well. But it's there definitely are. I mean, it's a smaller town anyways. There's only about 50,000 people there. But it's you have bars where you see the same people all the time and you have the locals that are there. But they're there and they're there drinking until the bar closes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like it is that family vibe, but they're not just there after work for a couple beers before going home. Or I mean, they are sometimes, but for the most part that's where they go after work every day, knock back 10 beers. A few shots and then go home. And that's the part that I think is just really nailed into here in the UK that I've just never really seen anywhere else. Or, I mean, I guess I've seen that in other places around Europe as well, though, where, like, you go after work, you have a couple drinks, you can go by yourself because you know you'll run into people you know there, because it's someone's, like, it's your local spot, it's a lot of other people's local spots, and then you have a couple drinks, you chat, you talk about your day, and then you go home and handle your responsibilities, which are probably a little easier to do with a bus.
I feel like that's definitely true of the Australian pub as well. I don't know how many you went to, because I think you were there more in the backpacker capacity, but I feel like a lot of local pubs in Australia have that. You know, have one or two beers after work, go home, that kind of more social vibe. We obviously have bars and nightclubs, and there are pubs that are just for getting hammered, but a lot of the ones in Australia, especially rural Australia, are, they might be the best restaurant in town and the best place to go see live music in town. So they kind of become this like center of the community, that also happens to be a place where people can get hammered and vomit in the bathroom.
You know,
sounds like the US as well.
One other thing that's coming to mind as we're talking about this, and this kind of gets more specifically on, I guess, because I am an equal opportunity drinker. I love wine. I love cocktails. At the end of the day, though, I think beer will always be my favorite. The other thing I love about how different pub cultures or bar cultures or party cultures around the world impacts things is the type of beer that you're drinking at a spot. Mm-hmm. Like a UK, you're going to have some good, thick, you know, English-style pale ales. In Germany, where you're drinking bigger quantities, where you got those liter mugs, they specialize in lagers, whether that's a dark lager, light lager, something that you can throw back a liter of without being knocked out. Like, you know, you wouldn't want to do that with a double IPA here in the U.S., or you'd be...
A nice, thick stout.
Yeah, that would... Although, I'll tell you what, next time I go to Ireland, I'm going to challenge one of those pubs to give me a Guinness in a liter mug, because I feel like when I was celebrating my 31st birthday there pretty recently, I mean, I was plowing through Guinness from the time I woke up to the time the pubs were closing that night.
Yeah, Guinness in Ireland, though, like, it doesn't taste the same anywhere else. I was just there a couple months ago, and no matter what, I remember landing at the airport, actually, or maybe I was leaving, I don't know, but it was like 8 a.m. and I was like, I'm having a Guinness. I'm in Ireland, I'm having a Guinness. I don't care what time of the day it is.
I did the same thing when I was leaving Ireland last time. I had the exact amount change left in euros to buy a pint of Guinness at the airport, like when it was, I don't know, probably 10 in the morning, but I'm like, this is the right way to leave Ireland.
Absolutely.
Hell yeah.
The universe knew. Exactly. You needed one last Guinness before you left.
It felt pretty good. Like, even if I had just a little bit more change than what was left over, I'm like, wow, I literally have the exact amount left. That is the most beautiful coincidence.
The universe speaks and you listen and then drink. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, on the flip side too, we were talking about, you know, the most fun drinking cultures. I know it's probably a hard one to answer. So would you be able to answer, though, what country that you've visited had the sort of, and I don't want to paint negativity on them, but like the least fun drinking culture for you?
Sure. I'm trying to think. I wouldn't say least fun. What I love about, let me start off on a very positive note. What I've loved about exploring drinking culture across Asia, across South America, across Europe, Australia, is that, and this is going to be a bit of a beer specific answer, is that everyone... Word spreads fast now. So when someone comes up with a new style on the West Coast or the East Coast of the U.S., it's probably only going to be like 3 months before the rest of the world is trying to replicate that as well, too. And I think that's really cool with how connected things are. But what I love about different drinking cultures is highlighting unique ingredients to those countries. So I'll give an example. Drinking culture in Japan is not quite the same. Oh, I'll just say it, like, extroverted culture that you'd get down in Latin America, for example.
Definitely. I can agree with that.
But there is so much care and concern and focus on making a great beer in Asia. And I love, they'll do a lot of beers that have, like, native fruits, like yuzu fruit, that add some sweetness to it, goes great with sushi. I think it's really, the way I look at that question and my approach to drinking, and this is kind of my glass half full approach to life in general, is I'm always looking around for what are the cool things about this culture that I'm not necessarily going to see somewhere else in the world.
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah, and that's something that really stuck out in Japan this year as I was getting involved in doing a little beer tour around there, because what's been one of the most fun thing parts about doing the podcast is maybe about a month and a half before I went to Japan, I was down in Mexico City exploring their beer culture, and the leader of the Mexico Craft Brewers Guild, who was on the pubcast, set me up with some cool beer judges in Japan, and I ended up getting to go to this private brewing industry only event in Japan where they were showcasing some pouring techniques of Sapporo beer, which is their main macro lager. Mm-hmm. But they showed 6 different ways that you could pour the beer to subtly change the flavor and the taste of the beer.
Wow. I love that. The science behind Japan is just amazing. Like, the level of care and craftsmanship.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree. And one of the most interesting parts about that experience was the whole thing was in Japanese. Like, I was sitting in this tasting session I was there for 3 hours. And the only person I had to kind of translate for me was the guy that had invited me. He'd come over every once in a while. He'd be like, hey, this is what we're talking about right now. This is the taste that you might notice. But, for someone that is, a born English speaker, I think it's worth finding yourself in those situations every once in a while where you're like, wow, the whole world doesn't just cater to what I was born into. Because I think one thing I always try to keep in check when I travel is just realizing how, I'll just use the word privileged, I've been in a lot of ways. Like, mm-hmm. And I think one of the ultimate definitions of that is when you can travel pretty much anywhere in the world and know your native language will be spoken. I mean, just think about how like lucky you are to be born into that and like have that flexibility and that freedom. And that's why I always try to do my best when I'm traveling around to know the greetings, know the basic salutations. In my case, I need to know how to say cheers in any language when I'm traveling. So it was a great educational experience, a bit of a humbling experience, and just really neat all around to be a part of that. Because I'll be honest, had I never started the podcast, I can guarantee I never would have been able to do something like that.
Oh, no, yeah.
For anyone that might be listening out there that's like, oh, should I start a podcast on this one niche thing that I like? My answer is probably going to default to yes, because if you do it enough, you're going to find yourself getting into some other cool opportunities.
Hell yeah. Well, and in good news for you, if you know cheers in Japanese, you also know it in Korean and Chinese now.
Yes, yeah. Kanpai,
I mean,
correct?
Yeah, I mean, the pronunciation changes a little. It's like ganbei instead of kanpai, but essentially mm-hmm. the same word. So there you go. You're all set for 2 more countries now.
Absolutely. Yeah, I need to get back over there. I've been to Southeast Asia, but so far Japan and Thailand and Myanmar are the only 3 spots I've hit there.
China has a really good emerging craft beer culture. I used to work for a company there called Lost Plate Tours.
Okay.
And we would do brewery tours. And you can get some really unique flavors there. Like they use Sichuan peppercorns and locally grown honey. And it really creates some interesting flavors. And they're being really experimental with it.
Nice. Yeah. It was interesting. There was a brewery that I saw down in San Diego shut their doors recently and closed down. And I was wondering why they did that. Well, it turned out the brewmaster from there was moving to China to become the brewmaster at a Chinese brewery. I'm like, well, that's something I wasn't necessarily expecting. But yes, the global synergies in beer and the way that people are leveraging what's unique to their country in mm-hmm. beer is probably one of the most interesting things about it right now.
And I mean, beer is obviously like sort of your preference, but are you trying a lot of the local spirits? Like obviously Japan's famous for its sake and its plum wine and its whiskey. But is that something you try and get to as well? Like those more unique, distinctive local spirits or wines or whatever's been sort of created from scratch in that region?
Absolutely. Yeah, I was doing my share of sake tasting around Japan this year. That was enjoyable. You know, and there's some like unique liqueurs in, I can't remember the name, but I was over in Portugal maybe, what was it, like a year and a half ago, and they had some awesome fruit-based liqueurs there that I was really enjoying. I wish I remembered the name off the top of my head. I might have to send that to you guys later because I'm kicking
we'll add it to the description
right now.
Isn't it? Well, Jinya?
I think that sounds familiar. If
Jinya or something like that.
Yeah. It's ringing a bell. I might look at it when there's a break in the action. I might do some Googling here. But
well, yeah, I mean,
I think you got it.
On that topic, because, like, basically just around Europe in general, it's pretty much every country has their own version of, like, a liqueur. So in Croatia, it's, oh my God, I can't believe I'm blanking on this.
Uh-oh.
Well, I was going to say, because I was thinking in Spain, we were talking about the Camino last week on the podcast, and, like, it's Arujo, like, you drink Arujo everywhere. Oh, Rakia. So Arujo in Spain,
oh my gosh.
Rakia in Croatia, Ouzo in Greece, and it's all very, very similar. They just have their own names for it.
I'll tell you what, you're bringing back flashbacks from my conversation with Tristan, because Rakia, jeez, that stuff will grow hair on your chest.
Well, it depends on what type they give you, because I remember living in, like, well, also when I was in Spain, so there's so many different types of, you know, Arujo or Rakia or, like, I can't remember what they call it in the Czech Republic, but you have the clear ones, which in Prague it was, like, Slivovica. And I can't remember what this one in Spain was called, but those are the ones that, like, really, like, they taste like moonshine, basically. And they'll definitely grow some hair on your chest. But then you have the sweeter ones, like in Croatia, what was, like, Medica, which is the honey one. And then in Spain, they had an Arujo that was, like, caramel flavored. And so those ones are, like, the sweeter ones. And I've told this story on the podcast before, but I remember being in Spain and the woman at the place I was at was like, this one, like the clear one, this is for the men. And this brown one, this is for the women. And I was like, fuck you. Like, I'm not, don't be sexist to the alcohol I can drink. And
I would have had the same answer for the opposite reason. I would have been like, hell yeah, give me that brown one. That sounds a lot better.
Sign me up for the one that tastes good. I'm on board with that.
Yeah. I know. For women, it's the totally opposite effect. Like, you can't tell us we can't do something because it's, like, too strong for us or too, you know, dangerous for us. Of course we're going to do it to prove that we're just as good as the men. But, yeah, I ended up drinking a lot of that, blacking out and falling off a chair. Into
chair. Nice.
I will say that was probably for the best. That
gender divide women that you were just talking about, I find that with cocktails. Like, I love a good cocktail. And I'll often go out to dinner with my wife and I'll order myself, like, I mean, sometimes it's an old fashioned, so a relatively masculine drink, but often it's a strawberry daiquiri or like a pina colada.
Pina colada.
And they'll bring her craft beer and they'll put that in front of me and they'll bring out this beautiful cocktail and they'll give it to her. And I always have to sort of sheepishly take it back. And I'm like, I'm a man. I should be able to have something that tastes good. I'm paying $15. I want to enjoy what I'm drinking.
Yeah, no, everyone should drink what they like. That's my opinion at the end of the day. If you like the sweet stuff, do the sweet stuff. If you like the beer, do the beer. If you hate beer, wine, cocktails, whatever it may be. So, gender aside, drink what you love. That is my philosophy.
And if it has an umbrella in it, it doesn't make you any less of a man, no matter what people tell you.
Hey, I mean, if I'm floating down a river in Texas, I will drink Bud Light Lime all day long.
Oh hell yeah.
Bud Light on a hot day, I mean, I wouldn't go out of my way to have it, but in the right circumstances, that is the perfect drink.
Have you ever had, sorry, Chris L. You're from America. Have you ever had hams?
Hams. Oh yeah. That's a fine Wisconsin beverage. So I went to school in Milwaukee. So that's like I grew up in two major beer cities, going from St. Louis, home of Budweiser, up to Milwaukee for school, home of Miller, and PBR and hams and all of these other wonderful.
You stayed very
beverages.
Hydrated.
I did. Yeah, it's like it's also a good excuse when I drink a lot of something. Like, it's just part of my heritage. Like, this is just part of my upbringing. Come on.
Yeah, I like, because in California, everyone drinks, you know, especially in university, it's all, you know, Bud Light, Coors Light, Natty Light, Keystone Light.
Oh,
if you're really
natty,
like, cheap and broke and playing beer pong for 10 hours. But PBR was like the big one that was at the dive bars that everyone always gets, like a PB&J, a PBR and a shot of Jameson for like $5. Yep. And then my old roommates introduced me to Hams, and they're like, this is like the classy, like, cheap beer. Because, yeah. And like, honestly, like the craft cocktail bars in my town, like, sold Hams for like $3 a can, and it served in a can. And yeah, it was great. Yeah. And I remember floating down the river in Yosemite, and a bunch of people I was with had like White Claws and Coronas. And we passed these group of people that had Hams, and I was like, I will trade you a White Claw for a Hams. Give me some of that.
I would just dump the White Claw in the river. I have
oh my god, yeah, White
on,
Claw is terrible.
I have not
gotten on board that bandwagon yet, nor do I know if I will. I know I'm in the minority right now because everyone else seems to love it, but I'm like, I can't cross that threshold yet.
Well, a lot
it
of people...
It combines two of my least favorite things, like sparkling water... And what I can only assume is rubbing alcohol. It's like, why would I drink that?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't gotten into the LaCroix stuff either from a non-alcohol standpoint. I'm like, if I'm going to drink that, I'm just going to drink water. And if I want something with alcohol, I'm going to drink a beer. Let's get real.
I love it, but I also love LaCroix and I love sparkling water. So y'all can fuck off. What were we just saying? You drink whatever you like to drink.
Yeah,
we forgot to mention that
you can drink that. I'll just be happily sitting on my inner tube in the river, sipping my Bud Light Lime and minding my own business at that point.
I just drink the river water if those are my two options.
Well, my problem is I actually just drink everything. I like everything. I love beer. I just had a glass of red wine with my dinner, and now I've poured, just to warn you guys, I've poured a way too large shot of bourbon because the glass is very deceptive. So by the end of this episode, I might be a little bit drunk.
Where do you get bourbon in London, by the way? Is that readily available over there?
I'm drinking Woodford Reserve I got on special at the wine shop that's around the corner from my house.
Nice.
And actually, I was drinking a red wine from San Luis Obispo, California.
Oh, snap.
And I actually gave it to my flatmate who's British, and he was like, oh my god, this is great. I could drink a million of these. And I was like, yeah, California red wine.
That is Cali wine for you. I'm definitely spoiled in San Francisco because we have such great beer culture as well as such great wine culture. And obviously the wine culture gets the attention up here, but Northern California has done a lot for beer over the years. Sierra Nevada Pale Ale to... the massive craft movement that we've got going in the Bay Area right now. It is a spot to be to drink.
Yeah, I mean, it's all over California in general. Like, it's probably even the States. Like, it's ridiculous the amount of breweries that are popping up everywhere. I remember when I went to Denver to visit some friends, there's a Larimer Street, I think the name of the street is. And I remember walking down the street and it's literally just a row, brewery after brewery after brewery after brewery after brewery. And you just walk door to door from every
single
brewery.
I end up in Denver at least a few times a year. They have a killer beer culture out there right now. The Great American Beer Festival, which is kind of like a craft beer version of Oktoberfest. It's the biggest beer event in the U.S. That's there every year, so I'm always out there for that. And yeah, Larimer Street, I think it's the Rhino neighborhood, River North or something like that, whatever it is. But that's where, like you said, just brewery after brewery after brewery after tasting room. They're doing some cool things out there in Colorado.
I've never seen anything like it because in Central Coast, where I'm from, like, we have loads of breweries and loads of wineries. We actually have more wineries in our county than Napa does in Sonoma. But, like, you have to drive to get to each one, whereas like being somewhere where you can literally walk out the door, walk about 30 paces, and you're in another brewery, it's a little dangerous.
You also have Firestone Walker down there, one of the most well-respected breweries in the U.S.
We sure do. Firestone beer, it's a great beer. One of the things I wanted to like kind of transition over to, though, is because I know that we were talking about, you know, drinking cultures and things like that. I think, and at least in my opinion, yes, the UK and Australia, and then of course other parts of the world can do the like easy drinking, only have a couple, that sort of thing. And I think the US definitely has a binge drinking issue as well as the UK and Australia on the other side
of
things.
We have a huge issue with binge drinking in Australia, yeah.
Do you think that there's factors that contribute to that or don't contribute to that, like drinking age or being able to, the ability to drink in public or it being, you know, like laws and restrictions and stuff like that affect the type of culture in a country.
Yeah, I don't really have a lot of facts to base this on, but I do think the fact that we make drinking so taboo and make it such a thing that it's like, you can't do it until you're 21, like, that does get people to go buck wild over it versus other countries where the drinking age is 18, or where having a drink at dinner with your family, if you're not 18, is okay. Like, you just, it's just more of a, it's just a regular thing. And I think the nature of any youth is, if it's a regular thing, it's not that exciting. But if it's something I'm not supposed to be doing, well, hell yeah, I'm going to do it. So I think that's, we create, what's the right way to describe it? Like an unnecessary rebellion, taboo element around it that creates a lot of hype. And a lot of poor decisions when someone does become of legal drinking age, or even before they're of legal drinking age. So
that's true of a lot of things, because if you look at it, it's the same with drugs. It's the same with, I mean, what country produces some of, like, the vast amount of pornography is coming from the States, which traditionally has a much more conservative view of what is okay in sex.
Yeah.
And it's the same with drugs, and it's the same with alcohol. It's like the places where those things are forbidden or taboo are the places that inevitably build up a culture, like a subculture of, yeah, rebellion and overindulgence, I think.
Yeah. No, it's, I agree. When you're putting those limits on it, you know, especially when you're growing up and becoming of age, you have that kind of natural instinct to rebel against the older generation and the rules that are in place. So, yeah, it's one of those things that I don't, it will take a long time to change that drinking culture in the U.S., I'll put it that way.
Oh, yeah, I don't even know if that would ever even happen in our lifetime.
Yeah, and you know, I think on the plus side, I think there are a lot of nice things that have happened. I think the onset of Lyft and Uber, I think, is getting people to drink more responsibly and not get behind the wheel when they make, you know,
those
decisions. So, you know, we're taking steps in the right direction. I think there's more, you know, I think the biggest thing is there's just more health awareness now in our generation. And that doesn't just translate to what you're drinking and what you're eating, but, you know, how much you're doing yoga, how you're going to the gym, how you set work-life balance. So, because I'll admit, I have a lot more friends than I thought I would that are just like, I don't drink anymore. And that's fine.
You know, that's definitely a growing thing.
Yeah, and I will never fault, you know, I love beer. I think there are a lot of things to enjoy about beer and cocktails and wine, but, you know, there are plenty of good reasons to not drink as well, too. And I try to be the person that respects that. Even if you don't drink, you can still show up at a party and have a good time.
Yeah. I definitely, and this only ever has happened when except for once. Usually it's only ever happened when I've been in the States. But I was just, to be fair, like, basically, I just have, every once in a while, like, I have one of those nights where I just went way too far with my drinking, and I know that I knew better, but I still kept going, and I have, like, I reach a certain limit where I just have a hard time saying no to anything else or to more, and I have to reel it back in, and I won't drink for a while, and I feel totally better, and I feel, like, you know, great, and then I just ease myself back into it, and then, you know, the holidays come around, or I don't know what it is about the States, but I just drank so much more there and than I drink anywhere else. And I don't feel that need when I'm living in, you know, the UK or when I was living in Mexico even. And I was working in a hostel, like we were drinking all the time, but I didn't feel the need to like get wasted to have a good time. And I mean, I don't know. Also, I was traveling. I was a lot more happy. I think you're right with the, people are starting to take more pride in their mental happiness and consuming a ton of alcohol, which happens to be a
depressant. Yeah.
Like, so people tend to limit that more and spend their time doing other things or their money on other things instead. But I could never, I don't think I would ever give it up completely. I just love the taste of it too much. Like, I love a good old fashioned. I love a good glass of wine.
Yeah, Kate, I'm in the same boat. Like, I know friends that will, like, give up alcohol for the month of January, for example. Like, right after the holidays.
Oh, yeah, or Dry July or any of those ones.
Yeah, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, I'll be admit, I've never done that. I'd like to do it at some point. One, I do enjoy drinking, but the other thing is I think anyone needs to do this, like, keep your, just be conscious of when and why you're drinking, because, you know, I always feel okay with my approach to alcohol, because there are some times, you know, where it's like, oh, I'll probably have a craft beer tonight when I get home, you know, that'll be great, yeah. But, you know, I'll get home after the gym, and I'm like, I'll have a protein shake, I'm like, I don't want a beer, I want to go to bed, and I'll do that, and it's like those, you know, as long as I look at it from the standpoint of, is it impacting my health, my relationships, my energy, and it's just being conscious of that, because I think a lot of people kind of argue about these micro things, like, you know, you shouldn't drink you know, after whatever time at night, or don't eat fruit after 2 p.m or all this little crap that yeah, it's a detail that impacts your diet and your health, but think of the bigger picture, you know, impacting relationships. Do you feel energized? Are you able to get your work done? If you're doing that and, you know, you're not drinking like 12 beers a night, you're probably doing something's right.
Yeah
I like that philosophy.
I mean, I love, like, the more slow way of living anyways, where, like, I see this in a lot of European cultures, where you're really enjoying what you're consuming, so they're not doing it for the point of getting drunk or having that drunk feeling. They're doing it for the taste and for, you know, the glass of wine that accompanies their fresh fish and veg that they've just grown in their garden, like... There's something, or like, you know, in France, where everything is about just enjoyment and slowly enjoying things. It's not, you don't have to slam down shots and shots and shots. You know, I like drinking whiskey, but I just drink it neat and on its own. And it takes me ages to finish, you know, a glass, not a full glass, but like a double shot of it. Sure. Because I like to just sip it and enjoy it. And I think it's more the speed that really is the issue in the States, or in other binge drinking cultures as well. It's because it's just like, it's shots, it's chugging competitions, it's beer bonging, it's shotgunning, it's like playing
all that college stuff,
games. That... Yeah, but it's stuff that, like, people still do now. Like,
yeah,
I mean, I definitely did when I ran a pub crawl. I had to do that stuff on the regular.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I mean, just I'm very much where you are in your drinking experience. Like, I'm a big advocate of flights at a brewery. Try a lot of different things without having to go overboard. And quite frankly, you know, I'll do a shot here and there, but I don't enjoy it. It doesn't feel good going down. Like, I was just in Chicago, and one of my buddies was like, let's get, like, some really nice tequila shots. And my thought was, it's like, if we're getting really nice tequila, I want to sip on that thing for a while. Because tequila is probably, I don't know why I'm going to go on a short tequila tangent, but it gets one of the worst raps in liquor, because... You know, it's usually associated with that last bad shot you took that night after you already had 10 drinks. But a nice tequila or a nice mezcal, oh, that is tough to beat.
Oh, you're preaching to the choir. My mom is Hispanic, and her and my stepdad, who's British, met in Mexico and bonded over tequila. And so tequila, like, runs a plenty in our house, and it's always... Like, sometimes we have the really nice stuff and we do sip that, but then you just get, like, to them, the, like, shot stuff is like Don Julio Reposado. And, like, that's what we shoot. And then we'll save the, you know, Casa, whatever it is, the really pretty blue and white bottle. That's the stuff that we sip, and you only have, like, one of them.
Yeah, that's tequila, the philosophy.
Tequila is actually the only upper. It's the only alcohol that is not a depressant.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Is it really? How's that work?
I don't know. I don't know if it's because of the agave or what, but it's the only alcohol that is not a depressant. It's actually an upper. And I think maybe that's why people that drink tequila tend to be a little wild or do, like, crazy things, because they're feeling good and they're in a good mood. You know, there's the saying, tequila makes their clothes fall off, because they just feel great, apparently.
Yep. That is a good song right there.
Yeah, but tequila is the only alcohol that's not a depressant. So that's the one that I actually encourage people to drink, because you might feel like shit if you're drinking shitty tequila, but you know, you won't feel down the next day. You won't have killed all of your hormones in your brain. That was my fun fact of the episode.
No, I like
drink more tequila.
I frantically Googled it to see why. And it was saying that it's still technically, it's both, because it's obviously all alcohols are depressants. But it has enough stimulant in it that it kind of counteracts the usual depressant effects of the alcohol content, which is kind of cool.
Well,
so there we go. The more you know. It's like
tequila.
Both, but it's got enough of a stimulant in it that it kind of counteracts the usual depressant effect you'd get from any other sort of alcohol or spirit.
And then what is that stimulant coming from?
It is coming from the plants that they use in making
it. Agave.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of cool. Like it's counteracting itself. It's like taking a no dose and a sleeping pill at the same time and seeing which one wins.
Oh my goodness.
Kids, we don't recommend that at home.
Yes.
I've never seen it done. I only know it from The Simpsons.
A public service announcement from Comes With Baggage.
Don't do that.
Do not take a no dose and a sleeping pill and see which one wins. That's a terrible idea.
So we're going to probably wrap up soon because we like to keep these, you know, under hour and a half, but
sure.
Just some like fast, curious questions. I know that I have,
yep.
I don't know if Chris has any as well. But
I do,
but like, what are the, do you see a lot of differences in like cultures that are very, very just beer heavy or very, very just wine heavy or more cocktail or like liquor heavy? And do you see differences in those?
Huh. That's a good question. I think it comes down to food pairings a little bit. And this is totally just my opinion. But I do, and it's ironic because beer is one of the best beverages to pair with food. But I feel like when you go somewhere like Italy, while they do have a emerging craft beer scene, it's definitely still a wine-centric part of the world. And I don't know. I guess my answer around that is maybe I think as craft beer starts emerging in those cultures, there's a bit more of an appreciation around it. Like for a culture that's been so into wine for so long and where it's looked at as, I don't want to say a prestigious beverage, but something that's meant to be sipped and enjoyed, I think there is a bit more respect for beer when it starts to emerge in that same way.
Yeah, and I know that wine obviously is big in like France and Italy and, you know, Argentina, all over the world, wine is big. But would you say that actually drinking wise, beer probably would take over wine, or do you think wine still kind of has that number one spot?
Ooh, wow.
I feel like this could be a biased answer.
I was going to say I can give you my hopes and dreams answer, but I don't know if that's that's factually accurate. I don't know. I love seeing how beer continues to evolve because I'll be honest, we might be at the point in the U.S. where it's jumping the shark a little bit with some of these like very beer nerds suck. I'm just going to throw that out there. People that use beer as an opportunity to, you know, promote their own status and their own self-worth. Those people are terrible. But you know, because like I said, beer should be enjoyed. There's a time and place for every style of beer. I don't know, but what I see in other parts of the world is people are finding ways to appreciate beer and enjoy beer and see it more as just, you know, more than just the signature lager that you can find in most parts of the world. The folks down in Mexico, when I was there, they were telling me, kind of to one of our previous conversations, they're really trying to raise awareness around craft beer and get people interested in it by really accentuating Mexican food pairings with craft beer. So yeah, I would love to see beer continue to evolve since I think wine is more the, I guess, the historical beverage in a lot of ways that has a lot of variety. I hope people around the world continue to see the craft and creativity and variety that can go into beer as well.
Yeah.
I like that. I have a quick question on obviously people who want to do tourism, not based around alcohol in the sense of like a pub crawl, but like for people who are interested in learning more about local beers, local spirits, local wines, like do you have a resource that you sort of suggest people look into, or is it really a case by case kind of before you get to the country, you're going to just have to dig if you're interested in learning about the local beer or the local spirits.
Resource for local wine spirits. Honestly, I'm going to say Google is usually what I do right off the bat. But, I, you know, since I imagine there are a lot of travelers that listen to this show, like, tap, pun intended, tap into your network and, like, see who might know something. Because, I mean, the world is so connected now. Like, when I go to a different country, I normally have at least one contact that can kind of weave me around. Like, that's exactly what happened down in Santiago when I was in Chile this past August. I had a couple people make introductions, and before I got down to Santiago, I already knew what beer bars I needed to hit around the city. And yeah, those results synced up with Google, but it's also good to get that, you know, firsthand recommendation as well.
Definitely. And if you're looking for apps that are kind of handy for that, check out, I'm sure you know them, but Untappd for beer and Vivino for wine are really good resources, because you not only get to keep a record of what you've liked and what you've tried, but when you're in a new area, it can recommend local beers for Untappd or local wines for Vivino that you might want to track down and try for yourself, which I've found really helpful when traveling.
Excellent recommendation. Yeah, Untappd is one of my go-tos. In fact, I featured those guys on the pubcast a little over a year ago, the founders of the company.
Oh, wow. That's
yeah.
So cool.
Yeah, it was a fun conversation. They were actually just, I'll say, other like software programs that they just happened to stumble upon making the app, and then they, you know, some tech guys just came up with the best beer app around, even though they were just kind of casually into beer before it. So funny story behind that. But it is, you're right, great resources, Vivino as well too, from a wine standpoint.
Awesome. Okay, well, do we want to play a game, Chris?
Yeah, let's do a quick game. I'm prepped. I'm ready to go.
Okay, cool. So we are going to each give you, let's say, three countries. We'll do it one at a time. And quiz your knowledge of how to say cheers in these languages.
Ooh, I love it. I might not get this perfectly, but hopefully I have a few under my belt.
Okay. I'll go first, and because I know you, you've already been here, and I know that you've been taught it, so we'll see if you remember. And no Googling, because we can't see you.
Oh, man. I know I think I know which one you're going to do, and I bet I forgot.
How do you say cheers in Croatian?
That was the one I thought you were going to start with. I cannot remember Croatia. I remember Prague. I can't remember Croatia.
I thought about doing Prague, and I was like, no, but Prague's too similar to, like, because it's a Slovakian language, and, like, they're all very, very similar. There's a few other countries that have it, and, like, that was too easy. But, like, the Croatian one, I don't know many other countries that say it similar to them. So I was like, that one's harder.
What was it in Croatia? Just or do I get to find out the answers at the end?
No. I'll tell you.
We're not cruel.
Okay. All right. I dig that.
It's Živjeli.
Oh, holy cow! Man, I barely even remember that one. That was how do you say that again?
Živjeli. So with
Živjeli.
With a J. Živjeli. Živjeli. And if I remember this correctly, and if anyone that speaks Croatian is listening, they're gonna laugh their asses off. But I remember I got taught to toasts, kind of, or like something you would say instead of just saying Živjeli, you would say something more. And I love saying it when I'm in Croatia, because every time I say it around Croatians, they just look at me in shock and start laughing. And I think this is, like, I remember what they mean correctly, but Živjeli, Ševjeli, Odoševjeli means cheers, let's fuck, let's amaze everybody.
I hope that's right.
Yeah. I'm gonna need to remember that one.
Yeah. Živjeli, Ševjeli, Odoševjeli.
And then, are we ready for mine?
Yeah, go ahead, Chris.
All right, let's go with Vietnamese.
Vietnamese. Wow, I haven't been to Vietnam yet, but is it some variation on Kampai as well? Or is it
completely
different?
It is not, actually. It's just yo.
Yo.
Yeah, so usually you'll count to three and then say it, but I cannot remember the
you
numbers
have to
for
count,
one, two, and three anymore.
You have to count down and then say cheers?
Yeah, yeah.
That's so cute.
It's like, mot hai ba yo. That's Vietnamese for you.
That's kind of fun.
It is fun. It's never a dull moment in Vietnamese drinking culture.
I'm glad this is actually a learning experience for me versus just me being me like rattling off salud, because, you know, that's no fun. Everyone knows that one already.
Yep. Well, now I'm scared to say, like, I feel like my next one is actually easier.
Okay. That's okay.
We should let him get at least one. Yeah.
I was going to say, I should get one right. That would be a bummer if the beer podcast guy doesn't know cheers in any language.
So in Gaelic, in Ireland, how do you say it?
Oh, wow. That's not easier.
What?
I don't know. I'm going to be back in Ireland in like a week, so that'll be helpful. Oh, wow. I know I've heard this one before. I can't. Because when I was in Ireland, I was just doing Cheers. I've only done one episode there, and that was actually in Northern Ireland. But
I'm pretty sure they still say it the same way in Northern Ireland.
Yeah, it's probably true. They didn't give me a crash course in Gaelic up there, so I'm gonna need to ask the audience again on this All one, right. or ask uh-huh. the hosts. I guess is the better way to put it.
It's Sláinte.
Sláinte. Yeah, Sláinte. That does sound familiar.
I was quick story because I seem to have a story about learning all of these things. I was in Ireland in July with my mom, and I was trying to teach her how to say it because we were doing tequila shots in our hotel room as we were getting ready for this wedding. And I was like, well, we're at the wedding tonight because it was my friend who's marrying an Irishman, so I knew there's gonna be a lot of Irish people there. And I said, it's Sláinte. So, you know, we had some wine, we were still getting ready, and we get to the wedding and, you know, make a toast at our table and everyone's going to say cheers, and my mom just goes, schlong me. I was like, that is not how you say it, mother.
She got the start of it right. That's pretty cool.
It's a very different meaning, though, what she's demanding there.
Yeah. I mean, if you met my mother, it wouldn't... No, actually, that was a terrible thing. Just, I was going to say that wouldn't be a surprise. It's just something, like, my mom is just known to say outrageous things, more for that reasoning. So, yeah.
I dig that, then. Then at least it was on brand. Let's look at it that way.
It definitely was.
I'll give you a nice easy one next. I think you'll get this one. I hope. I've just said it's easy, so if you don't, it'll be awkward.
This is in
Danish, Icelandic, and Norwegian. All have the same word.
Oh, and crap. Sweden.
So I haven't been to any of those countries. That's a spot.
That was gonna be my easy one next.
Oh shit! It's also Sweden. It's just spelt slightly differently for them.
Oh man, I'm just gonna go for broke at this point. I don't want to get anything right. So fill me in on this one too.
Do you want to do it, Kate?
Skål.
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 Like soccer, like a goal.
It
rhymes with it a little bit, like S-K-O-L or...
Yeah. Oh, skull. Skull, yeah. So I've heard that plenty of times in terms of people that root for the Minnesota Vikings. I hear them say skull when they're doing that. So that one will be easy to remember from now on.
Yeah, so skull...
All right, do you have another easy one there, Kate?
Yes, I think so. Germany?
Oh,
Prost.
Prost.
Yes. Finally. Prost.
Now I'm going to give you your choice here. Would you prefer to have Thai or Filipino or Tagalog, technically?
Thai, Filipino, or
Or Tagalog is Filipino. I just thought there's no Filipino language.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know what how do you say it in the Philippines, since one of my latest episodes was at a Filipino restaurant in the Bay Area.
Sorry?
I was going to say, we didn't go over how to say cheers, but I can tell you I drank plenty of San Miguel and Red Horse during that
interview.
Oh,
Red
interview.
Horse. That is just, oh, it's
dangerous,
lethal.
That beer. It's lethal.
It's so strong.
It sneaks up on you.
It really does. You're like, oh, this is just a beer I'm drinking. And then the next thing you know, you're vomiting on a beach in Boracay.
That is exactly what that beer does. You couldn't have come up with a better story behind that.
That's how I feel about, have you ever had a quack in Belgium?
Yes.
Oh
my
God.
Serve it in that weird wooden handle drinking
glass.
It is
my favorite beer in the world. That and like the kind of knockoff version, but the one that's a little bit more universal is Leffe. I'm not quite sure the correct way to pronounce it. But
Oh yeah. I've had Leffe.
Yeah, so I love Leffe. You can find that in a lot of places, but Quack is like 9%.
Okay.
I went to like a Belgian beer house, and we were not allowed to drink anything less than 9%. So we were like, we were drinking like 12% beer, 9% beer, 10% beers. Like, we're drunk after our third beer. Yeah, but Quacks, those ones are so good, but so strong. And they go down easy because they're a Hefeweizen, I think. Pretty sure that's right.
I can't remember. Yeah, that was, I mean, Belgium's just a great beer country in general.
It is
really complex, flavorful stuff.
If anyone's ever in Belgium, go to Delirium, because there's a book of about 500 beers you can drink there if you'd like.
Before we forget, the way to say it in Tagalog is Mabuhay.
Mabuhay. All right. Yeah. I like that one.
Just
it's got a good ring to it.
Yeah, it means long life, which is pretty much what all cheeses mean, let's be honest.
This is true. Health, yeah, yeah. Exactly. Which
to your health, to your life, yeah.
Yeah, you'll need a good positive start to your drinking if you are consuming Red Horse, so that's a good way to start it off.
You're going to need, yeah, that and a stomach pump the next day.
I just found a list of how to say cheers in 50 languages, but we could be here for a while, so.
I've got one up with 60, so I got your beat.
Oh, fuck you. Ooh. I was trying to find, because I remember, so I used to run a pub quiz at the hostel I worked at in Mexico, and one of my favorite rounds to play was I listed 10 countries, and you had to write how to say cheers in those countries, so there'd be, like, easy ones, like German, Irish, and then there would be, like, medium ones, and then there'd be really hard ones, and I always remembered Kipis?
Kipis?
Yeah, I don't know. And that's Finnish. Where's that one from? It's Finnish. But I always thought it was funny to say.
Kapiss.
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 I had a friend, total side note, I had a friend in college whose name was Kyle Poplowski, and his nickname was K-Piss. So shout out to my buddy Kyle. I didn't realize that was the equivalent of saying cheers
in Finnish. That's perfect.
In Finnish.
He's all set.
He's a podcast listener. I'm going to have to give him an update after this show. It's like, hey, you know that nickname we had for you? It's actually more respectable than we thought.
Oh, well, thank you so much, shit. Chris, for coming on the podcast and joining us and talking about booze all over the world. Anybody listening, if you want to check out his podcast, I have listened before and I can personally recommend it and say that it was very entertaining and not just because I knew your guest. It's called Pubcast Worldwide, and I'm assuming you can find that on iTunes, Spotify.
You got it. Anywhere you listen to podcasts. Yep, you nailed it. Pubcastworldwide.com and Pubcast Worldwide on Instagram. Those are the best spots to find us.
Perfect. That's exactly what I was going to go to next. So there you go. So check them out, guys. Give them a follow. Give them a listen. And you know where to find us. We tell you every week. Comes with baggage pod.
What?
And rate, review, subscribe, airdrop that shit to strangers, and we will
see you next Tuesday.
Love it.